What is up, you beautiful people? Welcome back to the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we cover all the innovation happening across the Bitcoin ecosystem. And that's what we're doing today. But it's been a crazy time, crazy week. I think I saw Bitcoin just dropped to its lowest point in over two years, with this whole FTX explosion thing, which really is crazy. There's been quite a few villains of people just mismanaging funds, going long when they should have been not so leveraged, bunch of stuff over these past, you know, year or so in this bear market, which is my first one, and it's just been wild to see. But yeah, everyone's still reeling from the FTX thing, and it's actually a good time to talk to the founder I have today, which is Tycho Onesh. He is the co-founder of something called Zest Protocol, which is on-chain Bitcoin capital markets. It's on Stacks, but lends out Bitcoin to institutional borrowers who want to borrow against their balance sheet, and LPs who want to lend out their Bitcoin and get a yield. So it's one of the first Bitcoin products that's all on-chain that's offering under-collateralized Bitcoin lending. So super cool. I'm not usually a finance guy, but Tycho made it super easy to understand. This one was fascinating. And we cover a bunch about his background when it came to choosing a chain, why go with Stacks versus something else, and a bunch of other stuff around Zest Protocol and what this actually is that they're building. So without further ado, let's jump in. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
We all know Bitcoin is for the innovators, the revolutionaries, and the builders looking to build a better world for themselves and for the next generation. We also know the saying, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The next best time is right now. The same thing applies to building on Bitcoin. If you want to come build with the most active developer community building new use cases for Bitcoin, then it's time you make the leap to learning Clarity. Clarity is the Stacks smart contract programming layer, which enables us to work on DeFi, smart contracts, and so much more, all built with the safety and security that comes with Bitcoin. Start today by going to start.stacks.org. Start.stacks.org has a five-step journey that will take you from complete Stacks novice to teaching you Clarity all the way to finding a job with a Web3 Stacks startup. Don't wait another month, year, or decade waiting to get involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Start building on Bitcoin today. Go to start.stacks.org to start learning and building today.
As always, thank you to the Stacks Foundation for sponsoring. And now, without further ado, let's jump into this podcast with Tycho Onesh, co-founder of Zest Protocol.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Tycho, how you doing today, my friend?
Yeah, great. Good to see you. And yeah, very excited to be here. I think we've talked for quite a bit about doing this. So here we are.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. This has been somewhat of a long time coming, but we were waiting for the right time. Ideally, you know, testnet launching feels like an appropriate time. So first of all, you know, I'm sure it's been months and months and months of work. So congratulations for getting to this stage. That's huge.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks very much. Yeah, it's been quite a, I guess we sort of started some development around January of this year. So it's like good that we're here now. Now we can iron out all the bugs that everyone finds and stuff like that. So you know, the work definitely continues, but it puts a good like thing on the horizon for you know, going to mainnet.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I'd love to jump in. There's a ton to talk about. Zest will be probably the bulk of this, but I think you have an interesting story to go kind of in the weeds about. And the first way I like to start most conversations is what got you into Bitcoin? Because the more I ask this question, it sounds so simple on the front end. Like, what fascinates you about Bitcoin? What got you in? And it's like, well, it could be a bunch of things. It could be sovereign, blah, blah, blah. It could be the economy's going to blah, blah, blah. There's always different angles to Bitcoin. So for you, what was the kind of like carrot that really got you in and intrigued?
Yeah, good point. I think like the first time I'm from the Netherlands, by the way. So I grew up in Amsterdam. Amsterdam, a little bit outside of Amsterdam. But the first time I heard about Bitcoin, I was still in secondary school. Actually, someone in my economics class gave a presentation about Bitcoin. Like, we all had to do like these presentations and so on. I was like, yeah, this Bitcoin thing. And it was like quite well known, I think, like in at that time. I remember in the news, it was like, you know, I think like the sort of 2011 or 2012, like the bull run around that time was like in the news and stuff. And people were like looking at this. I think the main thing that seemed quite interesting to about it initially was that it's like it's a kind of a money, you know, that yeah. I mean, money should be very simple, right? And like you know, money in the current economy is very complicated, and this is like a very simple kind of money that exists on the internet in some way, and it sort of works. So that was always kind of like a fascinating thing, but it seemed like this kind of plaything. And I remember back then I was like, oh, that's try and buy it, right? But obviously I was underage at that time, so it was not very easy to do. So it was like, well, let's kind of leave it, right? And then later it kind of kept resurfacing, right, in these sort of bubbles, as I think all of us you know, experienced, like in these sort of different bull runs and stuff. So yeah, then at some point you've heard it five times and you're like, let's look a bit deeper into it.
Okay, and just, I'm showing my own ignorance. Secondary school is that middle school?
It's like high school. It's like high school, I guess. So it was like 14 or something back then.
Okay.
And yeah, that was like, we had like these economics class presentations. And yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's so fascinating about crypto, because there's so many decentralization, privacy focused, pseudonymity is like, unlike any other kind of like career or industry I've seen, you're just judged on your merits. Like, what do you bring to the table? And so like, you're a very young dude, and but you just have, you show up, you have an idea, you can, you know, get in the weeds about whatever you got to build and get to going. So I guess I'm curious of what was your kind of journey going from, did you go to college? I guess that's an opener question.
Yeah, I did. So that was like really when I got in touch with crypto, like really the second time. So I studied in the UK in Oxford, and at that I studied history there, but a couple of my friends were in the kind of computer science department, and I sort of heard about this, you know, Ethereum thing, right, this smart contract thing, right, because I think Gavin Wood, this is before I went there, he had been around. Around Oxford, and yeah, there were like, for the first time, there were like people who I would consider sort of very smart in a sort of computer science way, who were like talking about this thing, right, where I first sort of heard about it more as like a, you know, kind of like a meme almost, right, like haha, money on the internet, look how funny. And these were like sort of people in my eyes who were very serious, right, and who were looking at it. So that was sort of, I think, the moment when I kind of came across it again, and that was really like sort of when it stuck. Okay, this is like an interesting thing. Then I found the SaaS company after that, so it was like, didn't sort of fully follow through with it, I guess. But then when the SaaS company turned profitable around 2020, sort of looked back, okay, how is this crypto thing going now? And then it was like, okay, now is really the time to do something.
Okay. So help me with that journey a little bit. So I'm assuming you're going to college not expecting to know anything in crypto, that you were doing some other target. And then did you just say you started a SaaS company? Did you sell that business?
Yeah. So what ended up happening there was a SaaS company mainly focused on like the government space and a lot of nonprofits for our customers. So yeah, what we ended up doing there is like it's still going, and it's now a profitable company. So I guess 2020 was like the moment when we kind of turned it profitable, and it was kind of like let's get people in who are there for the long run and not these kind of, you know, young guys that are like want to keep pushing and want to grow it as fast as possible because like the market doesn't really want to, right? So we changed kind of like the management, so to say, and then it was like, yeah, then onto the next thing.
Got it. Okay. And then when you're starting to decide, I like this crypto thing, Bitcoin looks interesting, you're trying to find maybe some white space of like where you can fill, like be of value. What did that kind of transition look like?
Yeah. I think for me, it was really, so in 2017 and 2016, I was looking with like a lot of curiosity at all these IPOs, right? And I was really wondering like, okay, what is like the first sort of product going to be that's going to come out of this that people will use, right? Because this is just like a company with a token attached to it. Like that's maybe not really something very crypto native. And it was always like, yeah, it needs to be like an internet first use case, but what, right? And then in 2020, it became very obvious, right? Because then it was like DeFi summer, right? And like DeFi exploded. And this made a lot of sense to me because it was like, hey, what are people doing with crypto like outside of smart contracts? Well, they're like, you know, trading on Binance or something, right? And now we can do this like in a crypto native way, like with smart contracts. And then I sort of, you know, went and sort of looked deeper into it. Like there was this whole like real world assets movement, right? Of like, or basically people like tokenizing real world assets to then use that in DeFi, right? So people have talked about tokenization for like a super long time, right? They're like, yeah, at some point, we just tokenize real estate and this and this. Like in 2017, it was like, okay, but what is the demand for that really, right? And now it's like very clear. That's like this crypto native demand that requires like real world assets to be tokenized to do stuff with. And then I was like, okay, like this DeFi thing, like that could like pull in like a lot of different people into the space, or a lot of different, you know, use cases or assets even. That I was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. But yeah, then the sort of big gap seemed to be like, well, doing something with Bitcoin there, right? So it's like there's all this institutional adoption of Bitcoin, and then they're like, oh, this DeFi thing is really cool, but then they're like, oh wait, it's like a completely different world. So yeah, we won't touch that, right? So I guess that was sort of the and around that time I kind of got across Stacks as well, like, you know, just launching the mainnet and, you know, some of the unique features. I was like, hey, maybe there is something here where you can do DeFi with Bitcoin. Let's just go and have a look. So yeah, maybe I'm front running already the next questions you want to ask, but
you're making my job easy. Now this is all super intriguing. So were you always, because when you're looking at what you just said, like you could go to other chains and do similar things. Was there something about Bitcoin that you've always kind of had a stronger thesis on? So you're always kind of going to be in either Liquid, RSK, Stacks, etc., and not look at any other chains?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like I was kind of looking around a bit at that time as well, right? Okay, what are all the different things you can build on? Like, what are people doing, right? But yeah, I was just mainly intrigued in doing something with Bitcoin and DeFi, because that seemed to be like a kind of, yeah, like a missed, a bit of a blind spot, really. And it's okay, how can it actually be done? And then, you know, you kind of, I remember looking at RSK or into that around the same time. And then I was like, okay, but, you know, but Stacks seemed to be much more compelling to me just because of its sort of unique architecture, right? And then really what specifically mean by that is like that you can read Bitcoin states, right, from Stacks, like from Clarity contracts. And that you can, and that the blocks are produced at the same time, right? So, and that's like a really unique thing that just you can't like just add that as a feature to Solana or something, right? It's like sort of fundamentally how you set this thing up. And it's like, well, if there's going to be any place where you're going to do something at Bitcoin, then it kind of has to be here, or it has to leverage these sort of unique features. So that was like kind of what sort of drew me to Stacks, and then of course like, you know, the great community there, and like, you know, then you kind of stick. But I guess really the thought was like, okay, what is something that we can do here that you can really only do with this technology, right? And yeah, like it wouldn't really make sense anywhere else.
Got it. Okay, very cool. Okay, so I'm intrigued about your kind of ascent, if you will, into building Zest, into getting hired at Trust Machines. And we've probably gotten to Stacks at similar-ish times, it sounds like. And there's multiple entities now that sprung up. You know, you have the foundation doing open source work, you have Stacks Ventures doing investment stuff, Trust Machines spun up to build Bitcoin applications. Although that's what I'm curious about is like Trust Machines is still, it seems like it's still kind of a black box. You guys are ramping up marketing and like what you guys actually do on the inside. But as someone who's been in Stacks a while and had a podcast, I prided myself on knowing what's going on. And it just appeared out of nowhere. Like you didn't really have a big brand on Twitter at the time. And then you were like, I'm building this thing at Trust Machines. I'm a product manager there. And I was like, what? How? He didn't come in the front door. He came in the back door kind of thing. So I'm curious about what did that look like to like kind of technically to go from your idea to then getting into Trust Machines?
Yeah. I think it's so first I was just kind of looking around, right? I was just kind of, and I knew like Luis, who is the head of growth at, or was like leading growth at the Stacks foundation. And so it was like a great way in, where he was like, hey, look at this, look at that. So our first way in was really the grant proposals, right? That's like the great thing of the Stacks Foundation. You can like go to the GitHub and you can kind of read what people propose. And back then it was like really interesting because it's like, okay, there's this blockchain out there. Like, what do people want to build, right? And then it was like, you know, Philip from Arcade Eco being like, hey, this is my grant, this is what I want. Or Chente from Alex, like posting the grant proposal there, or like Pseudo Zach from LN Swap, right? And it's like, and I was just like the guy like commenting on there, being like, oh, that's cool. And then like the Stack Accelerator got started, and then I basically got in touch with Trevor and was like, well, I would love to be a mentor here, right? If that's possible, right? To basically to help some of these early teams, maybe our first time entrepreneurs, and kind of help them think through some of those early decisions of like, you know, kind of one-on-one stuff, right? Like, hey, how do you do a fundraising funnel, or like, how do we set up hiring, or why do we hire who, and stuff like that. That was sort of what I was sort of, you know, doing this kind of discovery phase. And then it kind of became clear to me that no one who was building in DeFi was like was going to do something with this read access to Bitcoin state, right? Or like some of these unique Stacks features. It was all very much like Stacks token to Stacks token. Right, like the DEX on Alex, which is like great, right? But I was like, hey, someone like, we need to do something with these unique Bitcoin features at some point. As I was sort of thinking a bit about that, or like pitching it also to other people, like, why would you not do this, right? If you're Arcadico, and Philip was then like, yeah, it's very complex, like it's all very difficult, and I don't think the tooling is there, and so on. So I was like, okay, right. And then, as I was thinking more about it, then I got in touch with Gina, and I was kind of explaining what I was thinking about and so on. And she was like, oh, well, you know, this is like in October, I guess, of last year. And she was like, oh, well, like, you know, Maneeb is kind of getting started with his Trust Machines thing, and maybe you should talk, because he has like similar ideas, right? Or he wants to like build a similar kind of Bitcoin lending application, sort of what you're thinking about here or describing. That's sort of when I then got in touch with Maneeb and JP, and back then Trust Machines was not announced yet, right? So it was just like, I mean, Maneeb was also still like the CEO of Hero, and the only other person building something was Chris, right, Castig on Twitter, building Console. But it was not really, there was no structured environment or something, right? It was just like, well, you know, you've built a company before, you've built something before, like, you just go, right? You just figure it out, right? And then met Franz Ferdinand and good friend of a friend at the time, but now very, very good friend, Emil or Yoson on Twitter, who sort of teamed up with the three of us to then go like, let's build this thing, right? So that's sort of how it kind of all kind of came together. And then, yeah, I guess my official title at Trust Machines like general manager, right? It's like there's now I think four or five of us, but building different kind of applications, but yeah, it's just more like kind of an entrepreneur residence almost kind of thing, right? It's just like just go, I guess.
Very cool. Okay, well then, yeah, I think that's a pretty good segue to jump into what you're building. So, and yeah, what is this thing that's so zesty? Zest Protocol.
Yeah. What is Zest Protocol? So yeah, what we you know really started with was like, okay, we want to build a Bitcoin yield platform, right? Like using these unique features of Stacks to lock Bitcoin in a smart contract and earn a yield on it. And then like, okay, how are we sort of going to do that, right? And of course the main thing will be like lending, right? There's quite a large market out there of people borrowing Bitcoin, like, you know, that time I was just like reading the Genesis quarterly reports to kind of figure out like that it was a pretty big market. And it was like, okay, well, who is borrowing Bitcoin and how are they doing that, right? And who are these people? And then discovered that that's mainly market makers who primarily borrow Bitcoin under collateralized, right? Or just against their balance sheet, which makes sense, right? Because if you're going to put up collateral, you probably would want to always put up something more stable than the thing that you're borrowing. But in crypto, the most stable thing is Bitcoin, right? So then we sort of realized, okay, it needs to be like this kind of institutional lending application where people are essentially like pooling capital, which can then be lent out through the protocol to institutions, right? And then I came across like Maple Finance that had already done that with UCC and ETH. And essentially, I think that really the fundamental insight is here, like, well, Bitcoin is money, right? So if Bitcoin is money, then there is companies out there with future earnings in Bitcoin, and they benefit from bringing those to the present through borrowing, right? To invest or growing into their business. And today that's mainly market makers, right? They borrow a lot of Bitcoin, but also other cryptocurrencies, right? To market make with, to trade essentially. We're leveraging their future earnings, right? Because they take in Bitcoin to make more Bitcoin with, right? Through arbitrage and stuff like that. They generate like a really good, strong real yield. But then after that, you can imagine that we'll move more into the mining space, right? A lot of miners, you know, they earn Bitcoin, they have future earnings in Bitcoin. Makes sense for them to borrow Bitcoin, you know, sell that, cover their operations and sort of make it back over time, right? And then after that, it could really be like any company that has future earnings in Bitcoin either borrow against those or sort of hedge it out, right? If you're a luxury company and you're like accepting Bitcoin for your handbags, right? Maybe you don't want to hold Bitcoin on your balance sheet. So then for every Bitcoin payment you get, you sort of borrow Bitcoin and sort of sell that to sort of hedge out, I guess, the balance sheet kind of risk of holding the Bitcoin. So there's, I guess, like a bunch of different things to think about. But it's more like, well, if this Bitcoin economy is going to be a thing, then you need capital markets, right? That's kind of the very simple insight.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, describing it as a Bitcoin yield platform makes a lot of sense. And I can see how the underclass lending piece is just the first little domino or like product you could offer. There's so many more that you can offer under that.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. And at that time it was really also like BlockFi and Celsius were at that time the big ones, right? And everyone was like, oh, why would someone use something decentralized? You know, people already use BlockFi and Celsius, and they're basically doing this, right? They take it in and then they lend it out, right? And then they earn yield. And then it was like, oh ha, it didn't work so well, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we do need to do it on Bitcoin, right? So it was like sometimes you sort of think, well, at some point this will make sense, but then in crypto always thinks like play out, like, you know, when you think it might play out in years, it plays out in months. So I think that one kind of paid off.
Right. So you said future earnings in Bitcoin, and as I was doing research for this, you said that in one of your recent talks too, and maybe I'm just left curve, I don't understand what that means.
It's actually good feedback, because maybe I should explain it differently. But yeah, I don't know, like what does future earnings in Bitcoin mean? Well, it means if you like a miner has future earnings in Bitcoin, for example, right? Because they can sort of say, okay, we mine, we have this amount of hash power, so this is going to lead to, you know, this many Bitcoin earnings, right? And they can kind of map that out, right, to some extent. So that means that they have future earnings in Bitcoin, right? They can kind of predict, okay, if we just keep going, then we earn this much Bitcoin over the next 6 months, right? And then you can, bring that to the present, right? Like that's kind of borrowing. You're kind of, you're basically getting an underwriter to say, okay, we think your future earnings kind of make sense, so we will give you those earnings now.
Okay. I'm starting to get it. So like the Bitcoin, the mining equipment they're using currently is producing hash rate, and that's producing Bitcoins in the present day relative to their part of the pool or their hash rate to the pool. But just like how a bank might lend your business something based on your revenue or your profits, you're saying you take a loan on that, and there's like an expectation of profit that the bank can then assume is true, and you could bring that into the future and then do whatever you want with it, whether you want to expand the business or whatever. Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Or it's also the same with market makers, right? Like they borrow a bunch of Bitcoin because they've got incredibly smart market making algorithms to move this around across exchanges and to sort of make markets, really, right? And then that results in Bitcoin earnings. And then they have future earnings in Bitcoin now too.
Okay. That one's confusing me again, but we can pause it. That's okay. Yeah. I'm sure I can do my own research, and I'm sure that I have enough. You gave me enough data there to understand that. Okay. So thank you for that. That's super interesting. Then actually, before we go deeper into Zest Protocol, is this the most decentralized attempt at this kind of application that currently exists?
Yeah, so I would think so. Yes. I mean, of course, what would be something you could imagine that could maybe be potentially more decentralized is if you would have like an over-collateralized Bitcoin loan, right? Because then you could like always liquidate the collateral, and people could, you know, get their Bitcoin back. But you know, the reality is that most, also in like not real capital markets, right? Like the only a fraction of loans are over collateralized. So like 2% or something of all loans in the world are over collateralized. And most are like, if I don't know, ExxonMobil or something borrows, right? They borrow against their balance sheet, right? They don't put collateral for their sort of corporate bond, because they have like such a good balance sheet where they have such solid future earnings, right? So to really grow an economy, you need this kind of, you need capital markets. So you need to be able to borrow against, you know, future earnings, not against something you already have today. Right. That's why we have all these nice things in our lives. It's like, it's mainly like some sort of financial engineering of being like, okay, we know we have those future earnings. Let's try to bring some of those to the present. You pay like a premium for that, but you know, then you can sort of do other things with it. And then how it works with that kind of credits, right? Is that there will always be some or a little bit of information that is not public, right? About credits or about underwriting, right? And the way that sort of Zest protocol is built, also building on like other iterations, right? Like Maple Finance and so on, is that basically every pool or every Bitcoin pool on Zest protocol has like a pool delegate. And they are the ones doing like off-chain due diligence on these borrowers to actually check the books, right? To run all these sort of very complicated, financial analyses to make sure like that to determine their credit worthiness and how much they should be able to borrow at what rate. And then they sort of, you know, from the pool, they say like, okay, well, Citadel, you know, you're pretty good. So you're allowed to borrow this much from that because you've looked at the books and it makes sense. But that's not public, right? And then the idea is that you have like a lot of pools with a lot of different pool managers or pool delegates, right? They're all competing with each other on, you know, how good they can underwrite, right? So it's basically creating this kind of decentralized network of these underwriters who make it all work.
Fascinating. Okay, I have like four different questions of thinking I can go down at a point right now. I think I'll go. So you mentioned 2% of loans are over collateralized, which makes sense, I guess. Like, it's very capital inefficient.
Yeah, like or five or something, right? Like, don't pin me down. It's something like that.
It's low. It's extremely low. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned borrow against the balance sheet. Is it safe to think of borrowing against your balance sheet? How does borrowing against your balance sheet and taking on leverage, are those pretty close?
Yeah, for sure. It's like the same, almost the same thing, right? It's you're levering your balance sheet, right? That's what you're doing if you're borrowing against your balance sheet. It's sort of like balance sheet and future earnings. I guess the sort of, you know, if you just think about it very simply, right? If you're, for example, a podcaster, right? You have some earnings, right? And then and you have some sort of cash in your bank, right? And that also kind of creates some assets, right? And that's sort of your balance sheet. And then, borrowing against your balance sheet is basically that, you know, a bank or something is going to look, okay, how much cash do you have or how many desks in your background, right? What are they worth? And then, okay, well, we'll give you a loan of this.
Okay. Yep. That makes perfect sense. You're giving me a finance 101 right now, really. So, you mentioned the pools, they have different underwriters. That becomes almost like their reputation. And there's kind of like they can compete on underwriting requirements, maybe KYC versus non-KYC, or how much yield you get. What is the?
Yeah. So there's sort of two different. So they can definitely compete a bit on like how they will kind of lend, right? Like maybe one pool is like, well, our pool is like lends to miners, right? And our pool lends to market makers, right? And they have very different risk profiles, which will lead to different yields and so on. And also like the other sort of thing that pools can do differently is that they can either be like permissionless pools, right? Which is like sort of a pool where anyone can basically add Bitcoin to, or it's going to be a permissioned one, right? Where essentially only whitelisted addresses could do so. That just depends a bit on like, you know, how the sort of pool delegate in this sense wants to organize it, right? Some just want to be might want to be just institutional to institutional, others, you know, most of them just want to be like completely open. It just depends a bit on like what the strategy of that specific pool would be.
Got it. Okay. And the idea of the competing, you almost have like a free market of pools that starts to take shape, which I find very interesting. In the centralized world, is there a closest corollary? Like, is LendingClub and these kind of like crowdsourced ones kind of similar, or is it different in crypto where it unlocks something new?
Yeah, I think the sort of main thing to think about is like like BlockFi or Celsius or Ledin, right? For some of those, the ones of old, so to say, because they were sort of fulfilling this pretty important role in the Bitcoin economy, almost you could say, right, where people would sort of put their Bitcoin there and then they would lend it out to these kind of market makers, or some would lend to miners and so on, right? The problem there was that it's very like opaque, right? Because it's like, okay, you send your money there, and then you sort of lose track. It's like a black box, right? If you put money on Celsius, you have no idea, right? But if you still have it, like who has it, how it works. That could have avoided a lot of harm if that was much more transparent, right? Because in the end, basically what happened was that Celsius was like, oh, we were lending to 3Arrows Capital, and BlockFi was like, oh, we also lend to them, we have a good relationship with them. But in the end, what appeared is like everyone thought they had a good relationship with 3Arrows Capital, and everyone was lending way too much to them, and they didn't know that of each other, right? And then you get problems if like one goes under, right? And then what even then happened after that was like everyone was like, oh, let's take our money away from there, so massive withdrawals, huge FUD, right? And then then these lenders, it's like the classic bank run scenario, right? And in normal finance, you have like that's where the lender of last resort comes in, right? You say like at some point, okay, there's a bank run, well, we have this sort of central entity, but in crypto you don't have that, so then poof, everything goes. But then that also means that like the most creditworthy players, right, or the ones that actually deserve to have good loans, they also can't fund themselves anymore, right? So like the best market makers in the business with the best balance sheet could also at sort of the stroke of a pen no longer access credit, right? So a bit what happened in like May of this year was sort of like, well, think like 2008 without any intervention, right? It's like the whole this small crypto financial system that we had is just like totally disappearing, or really like the sort of crypto sort of capital markets like totally disappearing. And now it's like, okay, well, let's build it up, again, but then on chain, right, where it belongs. And again, like, Maple Finance has like done a lot of great work here, same for Clearpool and some of these other institutional lending platforms, which is really like the only thing that kind of, works in a big way in DeFi at the moment. Especially in lending are these sort of institutional lending platforms. I guess if BlockFi, Celsius or whatever would have used sort of Zest's rails, right, or Maple Finance rails, like we could have avoided a lot of harm. So here we are.
That's a good sales pitch right there. Okay, interesting. And we've talked about a good amount about the kind of like lending side, like that side of the portion and who that target audience is. On the kind of like getting a yield, the hodlers in some sense, who is that for? And I guess like maybe the question's in like the different pool delegates, but is there like minimums and stuff like that where it's like you're going institution on the lending side, are you going for big whales on the funding side, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's really for the init. So at the start, we'll just very slowly kind of would scale up like how the sort of Zest protocol pools get filled up and make loans, and right, just kind of like in the beginning, you just kind of need to check like does it all work? Does it all work according to plan? When it comes to like the first liquidity providers, really. I think it's most likely that it will be people who are quite DeFi native, but that have had this Bitcoin sitting around, right? Who are like, okay, we've been looking for a yield opportunity for this Bitcoin, but the best thing we found so far was, well, putting it on a centralized platform, but we didn't want to do that. Or we could, wrap it and go earn 2 basis points on Aave, right? So it's just like 0.03 or maybe 0.07 or something. Can always look that one up, but yeah, it's like notoriously low, right? And then it's like, okay, well, then we might as well just not earn yields with this Bitcoin, right? So it's mainly like those DeFi savvy users or like DeFi savvy kind of funds or something, right, who sort of have a bit of a duty towards their own investors to go earn a yield with their assets, right? So I think that's where it will start, and then that's like probably the more early adopter sort of slice of the population, right? But if you can then show that it's safe and it's good for Bitcoin, right? I think that's like the main thing, because if you can lend to these, if these pools can lend to market makers that make Bitcoin more liquid, right? Or if they lend to miners that secure the wealth of Bitcoiners better, or if some pools could potentially lend to Bitcoin-based businesses in wherever the world they might be, right? Then it's like, hey, this is like a good thing for Bitcoin. So we should not hold our Bitcoin. We should like put it to work, right, to fuel the Bitcoin economy. I think that's kind of the sort of thought where we kind of wanna go. But yeah, initially you just need to see like, okay, who are like the first people that like are asking for this, right? And that's like all those. That's like people who've done this before, on other chains.
Perfect. Very cool. Yeah, Physicus designed very, in a smart, over time way, very safe way. Okay, I got a couple more questions. We haven't talked about technically how some of this works, but I think I'm going to save that. You've talked about it in quite a few other talks recently, so I'm just going to link those down below if people want to know about how the DLCs work or how Bitcoin stacks intertwine. You've explained that pretty well in other videos, so we won't recap it here. I am curious though, because you're at the kind of bleeding edge of trying to push Bitcoin, use stacks, interplay with Clarity and reading Bitcoin state, what was some of the hardest technical or design problems that had to be overcame while you're building this out?
Yeah, I think what would have been great to be here with Yossel and Franz Ferdinand, but I think initially we sort of focused really hard on the contracts and getting the contracts design to work, also because that's what you need to audit and that will take a long time, right? And now the two audits are complete and so on. But I think the thing that's actually was probably the hardest is like, well, if you're building something on Ethereum or even if you're just doing like stacks to stacks tokens, you have quite a lot of like dev tools that work very well for you, right? In terms of like, it's kind of the hidden work of a DeFi application. It's kind of like the UI, right? And like a transaction happens and then poof, you go to the next screen in the UI and we all kind of, assumes that works well, but that's like not the contract, right? That's a separate thing. And there you've got all kinds of great APIs and great tools for even for stacks transactions, right? Or for stuff on Ethereum or stuff on Solana, like, you can just plug and play. But then when you want to actually start doing stuff with Bitcoin, right? Or like with like testnet Bitcoin, right? Then you need to do Electrum, you need to do Electrum wallet. Then so suddenly you realize like, whoa, like the last time that people really tried to use this was, in 2015, right? And it's still like open source and it's there and not much has happened since. So then it's really like, okay, we needed to build out a lot of things also like with the help of like Hero and Thomas from Fungible Systems, we also had on here at some point, right? He helped us a lot with the data indexing side. But really like the sort of challenge of like, okay, you're sending someone through a flow and it's like, okay, now they send Bitcoin. Well, if the Bitcoin is received, then send it to the next screen. Like that is like, that was really, really tricky to do. And it still is, right? Like if people go use our testnet, they will figure out, they will be able to find some bugs, right? That were like, are being fixed right now. But that's why it's testnet, right? Hopefully we have like created a lot of things, or we've like kind of taken out a lot of the weeds, for people to build something similar with less friction, right? And that's also why it makes a lot of sense to do this like so closely, like with Trust Machines, right? Or from Trust Machines, because already at the start it was like, okay, like we're really going to push the envelope here, and like it makes sense to do that in like a setup where there are like resources as well to do a lot of underlying work that normally I guess as a sort of entrepreneur or builder, like you can just kind of assume that there is. I would say that's been like the main sort of obstacle. And then it's also like a bit on the other side, like just explain to people how it works and why it's like why it works this way, right? And because I think people are very like, they're like, okay, token in a smart contract and then that, and here it works a little bit differently, but it's still kind of tries to aim for the same sort of user experience. But that's like also a big one we need to really make people comfortable and so on. But yeah, that's kind of what we want Stack to do in the future too. So
okay, very cool. Yeah, it's interesting that the you know, one of the benefits of Ethereum is that like because there's so many devs over there, you have like the tooling that makes the tooling easier for the, like it's kind of like it builds on itself and you don't really think about it. You have the idea and you want to get to building and not realize there's a bunch of little like middleware stuff that's just not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what consensus did as well. That's fair. Like, I mean, that's kind of trust machines sort of, you know, sometimes you sort of you need to explain it to people. It's a bit like, well, think consensus, but then for building on Bitcoin, right? And they like consensus built all these great tools for like Infura and so on for just making it really easy to do stuff on with Ethereum or MetaMask even for that matter, right? Just like there's this blockchain thing, how do we make it actually easy for people to use it, to build on it and so on. And they became like a massive company with all of these first apps, but also just like, you know, paving the way with good tooling, right? So yeah, these things take time, right? So that's also what the people here are working on really hard and that's why we're sort of why we're here.
Perfect. Okay. This has been a fantastic conversation. Last question. I like to end on kind of a positive high note. And so I'm thinking like, you know, Stax is number three, maybe it's number two, you know, it's hugged up to Bitcoin and it's like 5 years in the future. You guys have been executing phenomenally in your kind of ideal, perfect, rosy colored glasses future. What does Zest look like in 5 years from now? And what kind of impact has it had on the world?
Yeah. No, that's a really really good picture to paint, I think. Yeah, I think 5 years from now, like I think it would be really, really exciting, I think, it's something like Zest becomes infrastructure, right? I think that's like the real thing. So most people, there are a lot of people interacting with Zest protocol, but they don't know that they're doing that, right? And I guess there could be a lot of different pools that will have different strategies, right? And some are lending to some pools are lending to miners and other pools are lending to market makers and others are lending to businesses in El Salvador or something, right? That like have future earnings in Bitcoin in that way. And, you know, you have this kind of global capital market. And then as a normal person, I'm just like have my Bitcoin and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to put it in this contract, right? And then basically what that contract does is it just takes a little bit of exposure to like a thousand pools, right? That all have like some sort of rebalancing way of like fueling the big Bitcoin economy, like in a way that people now invest in ETFs, right? Or in sort of a basket of bonds or something like that. Yeah, that's I think like really like long term, it's the kind of infrastructure for it's also a bit what happens when you put your money in a bank account, right? You just put your money in a bank account and which is, by the way, owned by a centralized entity. But yeah, it, in the end, you basically have a basket of a lot of stuff, right? And that creates like a little bit of yield in that way, or maybe more, you know, coming up. And then here, it like could be the decentralized version where you just put it in a contract, and then that puts it in other contracts, and you know, in the end, just kind of makes this whole Bitcoin economy thing go around, right? And I think that's that's where we'd really, really that would be really exciting to go there. But yeah, then the question is like, where does it start, right? And the start is like today. It's like, okay, well, market makers are a very good market, you know, to lend to from pools, and and that's like where you can build like a pretty good business today. And then when Bitcoin economy takes off, then you know you're already there. So that's I think that's sort of where we where I would say like. 5 years from now, or well, at some point, right? It's not in our hands when this is going to happen, but yeah, when it does, then we hope to just be able to help fuel it, right, in the background.
That's a fascinating North Star. When you were talking about the Celsius 3 hours capital kind of blowups and stuff, the note I took to remind myself was on-chain can prevent bubbles and bursts, which is kind of what popped in my head. It's like when you have the auditability of something like Zest, and you can kind of see that over time, it's not just changing the money that can make things more stable and sound, but because the money printer go burp makes everything go crazy. But the fact that you could see and audit those things and have more transparency actually makes the whole system just has better data to act on, which is so interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's also like an interesting note to kind of, at the end, like I should maybe actually look it up, because I'm trying to learn this first sentence by heart, but it's like the very first sentence of the Bitcoin white paper, right? It's like, okay, what is Bitcoin, right? And then Satoshi's like writing, it's a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash. Oh, wait, a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash would allow online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without going through a financial institution. That's like that's the first sentence of this whole thing, right, that we're doing. and then it's like, well, if it's a peer-to-peer version of payments without financial institution, then why is the peer-to-peer capital markets like that we don't want financial institutions there either, right? It would be a strange world where we have this peer-to-peer cash that, you know, couldn't exist on the internet between people without financial institutions. But then when they lend, then they need a financial institution, right? And they can't do it through contracts or through pools. I mean, I think that's really what ties it all together here. It's like the very first sentence of this whole thing that we're doing.
Yep. Okay. I think that's a good way to end it, my man. Where, any closing thoughts that we didn't cover, or if not, where can people find out more about Zest?
Yeah, for sure. No, I think, yes. Closing thoughts is like, yeah. So last week we launched Zest Protocol testnet. So if you want to test out like, adding funds to a pool or providing Bitcoin liquidity, like you can do so. If you need some help, definitely head to the Discord, because it's definitely a tricky thing to set up everything correctly. If you want to learn more about borrowing, potentially, like, we have a form and it will basically come to my mailbox at this point, so that's me. I guess follow us on Twitter, like, to stay up to date. And yeah, the current aim is to go to mainnet like early next year. And hope to see everyone there again.
100%. And what's the links for the Twitter and the website?
Yeah, for sure. So the website is zestprotocol.com. That's it. There you'll be able to find everything. And the Twitter is at zestprotocol. So yeah, pretty simple.
Perfect. Man, Tycho, thank you for doing this. This has been fantastic. I learned a ton. Hopefully people got a ton of value out of this as well. So appreciate you coming on the time, man. This has been great.
Yeah, no, amazing. It was great to do this. And then on the next time, right, we can come back when we've done a few million in loans, stuff like that.
And that's right.
We can chat again. So let's see how it goes.
That's right. Next year we're going to see the progression and ascension of Zest Protocol. So until it hits the backbone of all things in 5 years from now.
That's it. Awesome. Good. It was good to be here and speak soon.
Cool. Thank you, Tycho.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin. I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting. I've been waiting now, I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out, cause I don't think about everything going wrong in my house.